After she was elected president of Liberia, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf appointed a number of women to key positions in her government. And on today's Underreported, we'll find out more about President Johnson Sirleaf and the women who have been dubbed the Iron Ladies of Liberia, what they are doing to help their troubled country recover from many years of brutal civil war. Jonathan Stack is the producer of a documentary called, not surprisingly, Iron Ladies of Liberia. It's being shown at the Brooklyn Academy of Music this coming Sunday and then next Thursday as part of the African Diaspora Film Festival. I'm very pleased to welcome him to today's Underreported. Hi.
Hi, glad to be here.
When did people start calling Ellen Johnson Sirleaf the Iron Lady?
I think that's been her reputation going back in the early 90s when she first came onto the political scene. She's just a tough woman and somebody who wears that mantle appropriately.
When she came to office, it looked like there was going to be trouble right from the start because her chief opponent was a very popular soccer star, and he seemed to be calling for a new civil war.
I don't think he quite took it that far, but he represented a kind of an old-world way of thinking that people were not interested in having become the next president, and he did win in the first elections. He came in first place, and then it came down to the second round where there were just two candidates, and she beat him in the second round.
When she took office, how bad were things in Liberia?
Things were just terrible. I mean, there's nothing in that country. There was no electricity. There's no water. Their unemployment is close to 90%. So pretty much you're seeing a completely devastated, non-functioning state.
Well, for listeners who might not be familiar with Liberia's recent history, we're not going to go back to the freed slaves and all of that and creation of Monrovia. But can you tell us a bit about what the 14 years of civil war were all about?
Well, the 14 years starts in around 1989, but you know it's hard not to go back because there had been a violent coup in 1979, and Samuel Doe, who became the president, was in power for 10 years, and things were just going downhill at that point. And the United States was beginning to lose interest in Liberia and in that part of the world. It was the end of the Cold War.
And President Reagan called Samuel Doe Chairman Moe, I remember.
and eventually, you know, things just kind of deteriorated, and that led to a big war. The war started in the late 80s and continued through the 90s, and it was a series of fights and skirmishes between two sides and many sides. It was complicated, and it was just, of course, the people who suffered most are the Liberians themselves.
Charles Taylor was the one who wound up coming out of this whole thing victorious. He had spent a lot of time in this country, but he also he'd been in jail, hadn't he?
He was arrested under circumstances strange. It was a strange story where he had basically been put in jail to be deported back to Liberia, and somehow or another, which is kind of the mystery, is that he escaped from that prison. It was in Massachusetts and later showed up in Libya where he was trained and then came back to Liberia to lead his revolution.
How brutal was his regime?
Well, you know, I mean, that whole era was brutal.
The people he was fighting were equally brutal?
Oh, yeah. I think everything was brutal and chaos and misery and the worst, you know, just the worst atrocities of that we are known to mankind, which is why he ended up being indicted for war crimes and is now facing those charges in The Hague.
And it's interesting the war crimes involve Sierra Leone, the neighbor of Liberia. Because he was supporting a rebel group there, and I guess it was all about blood diamonds.
That's what the trial's about. So of course, innocent until proven guilty. But yeah, that's what he's being accused. He's facing charges in The Hague, not for what happened in Liberia, but for what took place in Sierra Leone.
Does anyone know how many people were killed as a direct result of his regime?
These numbers get sort of tossed around. There are a couple hundred thousand people, say, to more. And then, of course, what happened in Sierra Leone is a whole other catastrophe.
And yet there are people in Liberia who still support him. And I remember during the 1997 election, supporters chanted in the streets, "He killed my ma, he killed my pa, but I will vote for him."
Yeah. Well, he's one of those kind of popular, he still is a popular among certain subsections of society. I mean, the reality is that 2 years into President Sirleaf's regime, unemployment is still in the 80 percentile. There still isn't enough water in most homes. There's no electricity. So the situation is still terrible, and people are frustrated and looking for alternatives still. And if things don't change quickly, that's why you see in the movie why there's such an effort to try to move things along.
Well, this has been a country that was only nominally a democracy for the years before the Civil War. I remember when President Tubman was kind of president for life. So it looks to me like Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is the first really democratically elected president, the first one who's actually trying to run this country the way democracies are run.
I mean, I think she's doing a fantastic job, and she operates against all odds. I mean, it's the way her style, using the kind of the strength as a woman, using her mind, her everything about her, she puts into this. She's been working around the clock for the last 2 years. She's really doing a fantastic job. But the truth is that there's a fall off in capacity. There's just not enough people with enough capacity to run that country.
Well, I remember when she was elected, and then Liberia suddenly just disappeared from the news. Because I guess everybody assumed that everything was okay now. Your film follows her first year in office, and she had, as you said earlier, she had a country in serious crisis. What were the first things that she did?
I think the first thing that she was trying to do was one of the first things, and you see it in the movie, is she was dealing with the market women. The market women are a very powerful force in the country, the ones who had gotten her elected. And she was trying to kind of create a better circumstance for them, so to move them off the street into these markets that she was trying to build. And this created a big conflict. So right in the beginning, as she tried to sort of assert her authority, there was a conflict. And there was conflicts throughout the year. And she's been fighting all kinds of battles to run the country. But she's also trying to battle with the world community to try to get debt relief, to try to get more investment. There's just not enough money. I was just commenting to somebody that the budget for Liberia is $120 million. That was the highest it had been in decades. And so just you cannot run a country on that amount of money. So it's basically she's out there begging, do everything she can do is to try to get investment. And she did a fantastic job. And that's really what's keeping the country going. And, of course, the United Nations is a big partner in everything that's going on there.
Well, President Bush just was there. And she asked, she said she didn't want aid. She wanted investment.
Yeah, I mean, I was involved with a film that had been funded through the World Bank for UNDP about trying to get Liberians living in the United States to reinvest in their country, which I do think that there is a lot of hope for Liberia, and a lot of it lies in the Liberian community that's here in the United States, part of that diaspora community who have 500,000 Liberians live here, and they may have to return someday, and hopefully they will return to contribute to the rebirth of that nation.
But don't Liberians harbor a certain amount of anger toward the United States for ignoring its plight during the civil war between 1989 and 2003?
It's one of the most baffling things about Liberia.
We're talking about a number of presidents ignoring Liberia.
Yeah, I mean, I never really fully understand it, and it's hard to imagine, but I don't think there's a place in the world that loves the United States more than Liberia. They just love, like, they're greeting President Bush today in a way that he's never been greeted in this country.
Well, the capital is named after a former president of the United States.
And we're not going to go back to the history, but as we know, Liberia is the only country in the world that was actually created in the United States. It wears the moniker Made in America.
And its flag looks like a variant on the U.S. flag. Before Charles Taylor, the previous two presidents were assassinated. Is this something she has to be concerned about?
I think she's always concerned. I don't think it stops her from doing what she has to do. But there's obviously she's got security around her. That's a big issue always. But she operates without fear, and that's her greatest strength and obviously makes her vulnerable. But I really believe right now in traveling around. I just got back from Liberia 2 weeks ago. People are still behind her. There's still a lot of love for her and belief that she is the best option. And so I think there's a feeling still of positive energy around her regime.
Well, she seems to be able to maintain her equanimity no matter what is going on, going from crisis to crisis. And the response to her is interesting. People call her Ma.
Well, there is that sort of a tradition, and I think you see in Liberia, what kind of a respect for an elder statesman, and she's an elder statesman, and their president and their leader, and a grandma figure, and she plays all of those roles and works them to her advantage, and it's just the style of governance, and she is incredibly cool character. I mean, it really seems unflappable.
But what about the fact that she's a woman? This is a country that's never had a woman in the leadership before.
There had not been women presidents in Africa. She's the first elected woman president on the continent. But there is a tradition of strong women leadership on the community level. And as I was saying before, amongst the market women are a very powerful part of civil society, and it's run by women. And the women have had roles of importance in previous government, so they're further along than we are, I think, and probably, depending on what happens with Hillary, we still have a ways to go, I think.
Well, she, I'm talking in this case about President Johnson Sirleaf, appointed a number of women to prominent positions, including the police chief and the minister of finance. The police chief had been living in Trenton, New Jersey, before she got the call to return to help rebuild her country. And as bad as Trenton may be, she couldn't have been prepared for what was happening there. The police had no handcuffs. They didn't even have paper to write on.
No, it was just tragic in the beginning, trying to get that country underway. I mean, there were no pencils. There was nothing to get started. But her name is Beatrice Muna. She had been a police officer in Liberia previously, so she knew the lay of the land. But, you know, she represents part of what Liberia needs, people who have been here now years training in this country and other countries to return to participate in that growth.
Isn't there an all-female UN peacekeeping force patrolling the streets?
Yeah, from India. There's a division of India. I don't know if they patrol the streets, but I do see them right outside the foreign ministry, which is where the president is now working.
It's interesting that a UN resolution was adopted in 2000 recognizing that women should play an important role in resolving conflicts. Women should be more involved in peace and security initiatives. And then we take one of the most troubled countries in the world and we see an attempt to actually put that into action.
And you know, what's so fantastic is that you see the way her leadership and the model she presents for other women in that country is impacting. And you see it on the grassroots level. So many women are standing up and getting involved. And you see it in our movie with our co-director, Siata Scott Johnson, who is a common woman, no education or little education, who becomes a filmmaker and a journalist and goes out to tell the story and represents the story of just the women on the street.
My guest is Jonathan Stack, who's the producer of the film we're talking about, Iron Ladies of Liberia, which is being shown on Sunday at the Brooklyn Academy of Music as part of the African Diaspora Film Festival, and then again a week from today, next Thursday, at BAM as well. Well, we see her dealing with a number of local crises. For example, she wants to encourage more foreign investment. At the same time, some of the companies that have been there have had terrible histories, including Firestone Tires. And she tries to negotiate better living condition for Firestone workers. Can't really pull it off as well as she would have liked or the workers would have liked.
You know, the everything and the magnitude of the obstacles, challenges she faces requires patience. She just can't go in there and kind of revamp 100 years of history. She's doing all she can to try to push along in the areas that she can. They were fighting over a huge wage increase that President Taylor had offered them in the 90s, and it wasn't reasonable. That was not a deal that they could force along. So the workers had to accept
He promised it, but then it didn't deliver?
Never got Firestone to force them to deliver. Now, you know, she is bad. She walks a tightrope. She's got to manage debt, but she also has to get new investment. She's working very closely. You know, the biggest change we saw during the year we were there was the arrival of the Chinese. The Chinese are in force in Liberia, and it's all throughout Africa now. And we were there when the Chinese president arrived, and it's interesting now a year later President Bush has arrived.
Well, the Chinese arrived because there was a vacuum. There was a very slow international response to helping Liberia, despite the fact that everybody understood that it needed an awful lot of help. Why?
The Chinese don't come to help in that way. They come to invest. Liberia has enormous natural resources, and China has an enormous appetite for natural resources. And in lieu of there being any other, you know, there is a vacuum of investment, and Chinese come and they put in lots of effort and energy, and they're doing all kinds of projects because they want access to those resources. And they're not alone. The Indian, the largest steel company in the world, Mittal Steel, signed a $1 billion contract with them in the last year. So there's a lot that's happening. And Liberia is not that big a country. It's only approximately 3 million people. It's a cloud of empty land. There's a lot of fantastic ways of investing. And it's a country that has a lot of hope and a future.
Well, what could the United States do other than what it's done? Eventually, President Bush forgave Liberia's debt.
They forgave our part of the debt. Most of the debt is not held in these bilateral relationships. It's not U.S.-Liberian debt. It's multilateral, or it's in the World Bank debt. and other international lending sources, I think IMF, these debts are way larger. The debt is now approximately, I think, still in the billions of dollars. So it's a short. A lot has been accomplished. I mean, what can the United States do? I mean, there's so many things that we could do in terms of investing. But, you know, in the end, I really believe the thing that Liberia needs most of all is our Liberians here to return in some form that they can participate in the rebirth of their nation.
Because a reverse brain drain.
Exactly. There needs to, that, and that gives hope to the country, and it's happening. It's not happening. You go there now, and you see young Liberians who have lived their whole life in the United States returning there and loving it because it's a fantastic place.
But what about all of the people whose lives were put on hold, the kids who were involved in the fighting from very early in their lives?
You know, I just came back from Liberia a couple of weeks ago and making a film with Amnesty about women impacted by war and women who had fought during the war, because there had been a number of battles during this period. And in the first battle, women were really victims, purely victims. And I think they got smarter the second time around and realized they might as well pick up guns too, because at least give them some protection. So we met a lot of women who were combatants or ex-combatants who were trying to reintegrate back into society. And that's the story. That's a very complicated story, but definitely women, their roles changed over the time, and now figuring out a way for them to reintegrate, and also for many of these former child soldiers to find viable. They've lost their whole lives, no education, no preparation, and there are those 70-80% hanging out with no jobs. This is a dangerous, you know, community.
All they know is you can pick up a gun and get what you want. And have there been any attempts on the president's life?
None that have been publicized. There was a sort of a rumored of a coup, but I haven't. You know, I'm sure they might, if they know anything, they're keeping it to themselves. It hasn't been out in the public, and it. You know, so it doesn't feel, and you don't see her, you see in the film how she really, she interacts with people. She's not sitting there trying to hide behind fences. She's really trying to reach out to people.
And she allowed filming of almost everything.
Yeah, she was incredibly generous and courageous to let us into her life, really, and into the political life of her country. And I think she just believed the value of getting the story out. She's a very transparent person like that. And, I think she's a fantastic, she's the exact right person for this job right now.
My guest is Jonathan Stack, producer of a documentary called Iron Ladies of Liberia, which is being shown as part of the African Diaspora Film Festival at the Brooklyn Academy of Music this coming Sunday, and then again on Thursday, a week from today. And you can find out more about that schedule by going to our show page at WNYC.org. It's also going to be shown on PBS, I guess, Channel 13,
yes.
Sometime next month?
On March 18th, it's going to be on WNET and PBS across the country. So as much as I encourage people to come to BAM the next screenings over the next week, if you do miss it and you can't get there, please, you know, try to catch it on television.
It's always best to see films on the big screen.
Plus, the film that we're showing at the theater is actually a theatrical-length film, and the one on television is just an hour version.
Now, I mentioned earlier that she asked President Bush for more trade and less aid. What's wrong with aid for a country like Liberia?
I mean, I think the most concrete example I can think about is with rice. I see rice as a staple for them, and there's no rice being grown in the country of any significance because they get rice given to them. And people don't even know how to grow rice anymore, and they live, it's like a giant welfare state dependent upon rice. And as much as people need to eat, ultimately a country is only viable if it can feed itself. And they have the capacity to feed themselves. They have the land and the tradition of growing rice, and now because of aid, they can't. It's not financially viable to grow rice. So you basically have eliminated a whole subsection. That's just rice, and that happens over and over again. So aid creates a welfare state, and ultimately creates a non-functioning nation. So it's a sort of a double-edged sword.
The other filmmaker you mentioned, Siada Scott Johnson, comes across as a very brave journalist, and another woman involved in the story. How has the press been since the fall of Taylor?
I mean, the press is you know, it's about opportunities. There is a free press, but there aren't a lot of sort of serious journalistic opportunities. I think that people are out there trying to tell their stories and trying to find ways of getting their stories told. Siada is part of a collective of young filmmakers. I went back after I made my first film in 2003 and found a group of young Liberians and trained them how to become filmmakers, and she was one of the people who went through the program. And so she's and the idea was to really encourage Liberians to become their own storytellers and not just become subjects and other people coming in to tell their stories as we were doing, and sort of to find that way of getting their stories told. So I think there's a growing independent journalistic and hopefully even filmmaking community.
Now, you've been involved in filmmaking in Liberia as well over the years. How long have you been going there?
I went there the first time in 2002, and I was actually went back. I was so blown away by the place and the stories there that I managed to I got a film being developed with about Charles Taylor, and I went and met him the morning that he was indicted. I went to meet him in Ghana and was going to fly back with him to Liberia and ended up spending 3 months during the Civil War, the end of the Civil War, which was in 2003. It was the film was called Liberia and Uncivil War.
Taylor is the first African leader to be put on trial at a UN-backed court for war crimes, which is remarkable considering there have been so many leaders with terrible records.
He's the first sitting president anywhere in the world to be indicted.
Milosevic had already
stepped down. So he's the first one, and basically that's what ultimately forced him out of office. He went into exile in Nigeria and then was, you know, in a deal, he was brought over to Holland where the trial is taking place.
Are they, you mentioned that this is the most pro-American country in Africa. Are they following our political story? Do you hear much talk about Clinton, Obama, and McCain?
People know more about politics in the United States than a lot of Americans know, though I think this election cycle people seem to be really paying attention. The Liberians really pay attention because their connection with the United States is so strong. Many, many young Liberians have fought in Iraq or fought in Vietnam. They fight because by joining the army, they're able to get citizenship or at least to get legal status here. And it's just because of the historic ties between the two countries. So that relationship and staying abreast of the politics is strong. And I imagine there's a kind of, you know, from their perspective, both Barack Obama is the first African-American.
Although he's from the other side of Africa. His father, anyway, was from Kenya.
Kenya. And then Hillary. I think that they're very interested and excited. And, of course, a lot that happens here is going to impact their lives in the coming years.
Did President Johnson Sirleaf have any say in the final version of the film?
No. She didn't have any say, but we did show her the movie. We were wanting her to make sure that we, you know, that out of respect, make sure there was no security compromise. But she was very positive about the film. You know, in typical fashion, somebody watches the film, you know, shots were there that I don't think are flattering, but nothing. We didn't change anything for her. She wanted more examples of children, and we tried to do our best to include it. But she wasn't involved in any of the editorial process.
Well, there are shots of her exercising on her treadmill, dancing. It's hard to imagine a president of most countries, a political leader of most countries, being that open about personal life.
You know, I really credit needs to go to Daniel Yenge, the director. He was just an extraordinarily tenacious, creative, passionate filmmaker. He is still, and he spent months and months in that country waiting around, and finally, I think just sheer will, ended up getting that kind of access.
Now, let's be honest. Nobody is as good as she comes across as being. There is an element of propaganda here, isn't there?
You know, it's funny, you know, you ask that question, and to be honest, I thought about it. You know, you're making a film, you're trying to balance positive, negative, and I really thought to myself, you know, there's so many negative stories that come out of Africa. If this is one story where we err on the side of being more positive than negative, then so be it. Let us celebrate the good that comes out of Africa, because there's plenty. There's not enough stories to tell about the good, and there's too many to tell about the bad. And I keep, you know, my line is, you know, this is the most positive story to come out of Africa since the end of apartheid, so we need to celebrate that.
Well, the film ends on a hopeful note, but as you point out, Liberia is still seriously troubled. And unlike the fall of apartheid, where South Africa was, say, a country which had an awful lot going for itself, Liberia still might very well have a troubled future, don't you think?
Yeah, I don't think you can take for granted that Liberia's future is going to all work itself out. That's why I'm so supportive of trying to get people to come back and reinvest in their country. If I were, you know, any African-American, you know, the nature of the law in Liberia is that if you have African descent, blood, I think a certain percentage, you can get there, you can show up there, and you can get citizenship. And with that citizenship, you can own land, you can purchase land. I would like to see, you know, Liberia could become a gateway nation for Africa and African-Americans and other Americans to go there and see.
And Iron Ladies of Liberia is at BAM on the 24th and then the 28th as part of the African Diaspora Film Festival. It will be on PBS on March 18th at 10 p.m. as part of the Independent Lens series. My great thanks to you for being on our show today.
Thank you very much.
On tomorrow's show, I'll talk to two of the finest actors currently on New York stages, Patrick Stewart, now starring in Macbeth at BAM, and S. Apatha Murkison on Broadway in Come Back, Little Sheba. Also, we'll hear about a strange but true Nazi counterfeiting scheme during World War II, and Please Explain is all about ants. By the way, did you know that you can see video clips of some of the interviews on the show? Well, just go to WNYC.org and click on video, and you can hear and see some of the recent guests, including Willie Brown and Idina Menzel. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neeschick, Sarah English, and Scott Goldberg. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Leslie Dickstein, Tess Hartman, and Rory Bernstein. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.